out on the rolling sea, with only the sky above you for a roof. What if your friends were there, laugh at all your jokes and share sweet salt air with you? Wouldn't that be good?
Good morning. Welcome to the roundtable for this Wednesday morning, the 4th of October. Very nice to have you with us. A great pleasure. We always love your letters, panel at WAMC.org, panel at WAMC.org. And we would love to hear from you this morning, as we always do. Let me introduce the panel to you, and then we'll get started with a lot of news that is happening today. Teresa Bourgeois is with us. She is a communications consultant and a regular on this program. For that, we are forever grateful. Good morning.
Good morning. Just delighted to be here.
Good to see you. Thank you very much for being with us.
Good to be seen.
Hey, we have a newbie on board, and we're very excited to introduce you to Don Morrison. He is a former editor at Time Magazine, an author, a journalism professor, a Berkshire Eagle commentator. And now he can add this to his resume, Don. Not that you have to.
And yet nothing compares to the honor, the privilege, and the prestige of being a panelist on the roundtable. Thank you for having me.
Well, I thank you. I know you're working on your CV as we speak. Very nice to have you on the program. We look forward to talking about all of the topics with you. Alan Chartok is with us as well. Good morning, Alan. How are you?
Good morning. Satisfactory.
All right. Satisfactory. We'll take. Good to have you here. Before we get started on the events of today, I don't think I'm telling tales out of school when I say that we had a very nice day yesterday as far as raising funds for this radio station and putting money into the lockbox. But as Alan would say, we can always do better, can't we?
We sure can. And, I love our audience and I trust them. It's the only way you can operate. You know, we've had $2 million in one day fund drives, basically, and that's extraordinary because people realize how bad things can be in this country right now, and that we have to really sort of have the information. If we're going to have a democracy, you're going to have to know what's going on, and this is one place that has not shied away from telling you what's going on. And we're so happy that people recognize it. Now, Joe, explain a little bit about Harry Belafonte.
That's right. try it again. Okay. Harry Belafonte, we have tickets. There are about 240 pairs left of those.
Oh,
so
boy.
If you want to do that, you have to do that very, very soon. They went very fast yesterday. I'm sure they will go very fast today. So,
Joe, just let me tell you that I don't want anybody calling me up. I gave you money last year and you got to find me two tickets for this. No, it doesn't work that way. When the seats are gone, they're gone. There aren't any left.
And
so I could tell Roselle to stay home and you could go. But
you're not doing that.
Don't be calling me up.
And these are actual tickets too. So there's no like guest list thing. These are actual tickets. So once we send out the tickets and they're gone, they're gone. It's
they're
as simple
gone.
As that. So you get a pair of tickets, $150. It's Saturday, November 11th at 7:30. Harry Belafonte will be speaking. He will not be singing. He will be speaking to Alan about his storied career, about being a performance artist, a performing artist, his work as a humanitarian, as well as our cultural and political climate. He is a legend, and he will be at the Egg with Alan on Saturday, November 11th at 7:30. The tickets are going to go fast, so please, if you want them, don't cry later. Get them now.
Don't be calling me.
That's right. Don't be calling Alan.
No,
stop. Don't call him. It's an evening with Harry Belafonte in conversation with Alan Chartok at the Egg, November 11th, 7:30, and all you have to do is go to WAMC.org and click on Donate Now. You'll see the link for the lockbox. Click on it. On the drop-down menu, you will see you'll see tickets for Harry Belafonte. We have a couple tickets left for Capital Steps 2, but not many. So, again, just keep that in mind. But the important thing is that you do something in the lockbox. $10, $40, $50, $1,000, whatever you can do, do that in the lockbox and help us get to more than halfway in the drive before we begin on the 16th of October. Correct, Alan?
Yes, that is correct. I just want you to know, Joe, yesterday I was talking to a nurse in Great Barrington, and she told me that she was so taken years ago when we said $5 would be helpful that she went out and she had no money, and she sold a piece of scrap metal to find the $5 to put into the pot. I was so taken with that. I've been thinking about it all day long. It's just this, because that's really what it's about. It isn't about getting tickets, and it isn't about, it's all fun. That's all fun. But the main thing is keeping this thing going, and we've got to keep it going.
Absolutely. So we welcome you to do whatever you can this morning, and hopefully we'll have another great day. Again, we're all just trying to get that lockbox full before we begin the drive on October 16th. We also want to give you the opportunity for the tickets, which will be a brief opportunity, so take advantage of it now. 1-800-323-9262, or you can go to WAMC.org. If you call the phone number, just press 0, and an operator will take care of you. We're going to take a quick break. Go ahead, Alan.
I'm just going to say, and this is the time to do it. This is when we want you to call, but don't be calling me up later.
That's right. Don't call, don't write, don't scream, don't yell. Just do what you have to do now. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll get started with what we got going on here. We'll be right back after this. Great bumper music this morning, thanks to Vetiver and Johnny Urion, who will be at the Linda tonight at 8 o'clock, the concert being broadcast live for Live at the Linda. But if you want to be a part of the studio audience, you can be. All you have to do is go to thelinda.org, and it's going to be an amazing concert. We love Johnny Urion, a great pleasure. Of course, Sarah Lee Guthrie, great friends of the station. Vetiver going to be here as well. It's going to be a wonderful night of music. It's going to be broadcast live at the Linda, but also you can be in the audience, thelinda.org. All right, let's get to what is happening in the world and begin with an update that is an update on what is happening in Las Vegas as a result of the shooting Sunday night from the Mandalay Bay. Mary Lou Danley is a new name who has been added to the equation, the girlfriend of the gunman in the Las Vegas mass shooting. She arrived at the Los Angeles International Airport last night and was met with authorities. According to a law enforcement official, she was expected to be questioned upon her arrival. The authorities are scouring the personal and financial history of the gunman, Stephen Paddock, just days after one of the deadliest mass shootings in the United States, which left 59 people dead, including the gunman, and about 500 others injured. The federal official said Mr. Paddock wired thousands of dollars to the Philippines, and the FBI was scrutinizing that transaction. 12 rifles the gunman had in his hotel suite on Sunday were outfitted with a bump stock. This is a device that would enable them to fire hundreds of rounds per minute. That, according to an agent with the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms and Explosives, that was the result of a news conference that was given last night. This is what we know. Also, we should mention that the bump stock is something that can take a rifle and help it to feed more bullets into.
It essentially converts a semi-automatic rifle into effectively an automatic rifle. And a machine gun.
And it is legal in many parts of this country.
It is legal in pretty much every part of the country.
And also can be easily obtained on,
$99.
On the internet and for a very cheap price as well. Okay. So that's one of the issues that we'll be wanting to talk about. And also some very disturbing photos being released of some of the body cam photos of the officers who entered the building, entered the Mandalay Bay, the room of the shooter. And so we get an idea of just how many weapons were there, which is a lot. And also we found out yesterday that there were cameras placed in the hotel room and at different places where he was looking out for people who were apparently coming for him to bring him into custody. So that is what we know. The number of firearms, real quick, it's 47 firearms. Rifles, shotguns, and pistols have been recovered from the hotel suite and at two Nevada properties that Mr. Paddock owned. The weapons were purchased in California, Nevada, Texas, and Utah. Alan, we'll start with you.
Well, you know, look, this is a terrible, terrible story, of course. We all know that. And a lot of attention is being paid to this guy who is a lunatic. Let's face it. He has to be in order to do this. Nevertheless, I think the bigger story here, the more important story, is the concept of gun control. You know, after I saw, I thought there'd be a tipping point after Sandy Hook and those beautiful little babies being wiped out by an insane person. You know, to me, this is what the story is about. So this morning, we see Ryan, the speaker, who I now consider to be really despicable, who goes out. And what does he say? He says, we're going to not bring the silencer bill up. Well, isn't that nice? You know, these Republicans who are behind this thing know full well that they are in a bad spot right now. And the last thing they want to do is to be held accountable in the next election when somebody says, hey, you know, you are not for sensible regulations concerning guns, and you even want to have silencers. And this morning, I'm reading that the rationale for silencers are that they're easier on the shooter's ears. It's unbelievable. So, yes, the acting out of this guy is a terrible, terrible thing, and nobody should ever excuse it. But I'm really saying that the issue now is, are we going to do anything about guns? It's that simple.
Done.
Absolutely right, Alan. I would say we don't have a gun problem in America. We have a Republican problem. The Republican Party has led the attempt to frustrate every sensible gun restriction proposed in recent memory. There, some Democrats are also to blame, but this is basically a Republican crusade. It has become solidified over the years, certainly lately, with Donald Trump taking the White House. Trump, who only a few months ago appeared at the NRA's annual convention and said, you were there for me, so I'm going to be there for you, essentially. Trump has actually talked both sides of this issue. He's been for sensible gun controls after the Orlando shooting last year, and now he's firmly against them. But it's the Republican majority in Congress that seems to be the problem.
Now, Don, you've been you know, around for a little while. You were top draw at Time Magazine, isn't that right?
I've been around for a long time.
But you were top draw. You were the big guy.
Sized guy. Anyway,
and you've watched this stuff come and go in America. What is it about guns that Americans find so important?
Our obsession with guns is a relatively recent phenomenon in American history. The United States had fairly strict gun controls back in the frontier territories that are held up by gun proponents as the ideal time when men were men and guns were everywhere. No, they weren't, and they were reasonably strictly regulated, prohibited. You had to check them before you went into church. If you watch a lot of old Western movies, things started to change in the 1950s and 60s when the NRA was taken over by a much more hardline faction and began lobbying against and effectively began spending money with extreme effectiveness in Congress. And they also, by the way, planted this notion in the minds of conservative legal scholars that the Second Amendment guarantees an individual right to own highly lethal firearms. Much has been written on this subject. We could take all day to debate it. I don't think that's true. I think there is the traditional view of the Second Amendment, of course, is that it was designed to, the first few words say, refer to a well-regulated militia. It has nothing to do with owning a personal gun for self-defense.
Nevertheless, as one Supreme Court wag once put it, the law is what we say it is, and that's what they say it is.
You know, it's interesting. We're going to be talking about abortion a little later. That also is a constitutional right recognized by the Supreme Court and defended successfully against many challenges. And yet we suffer terrible restrictions on access to abortions. Any attempt to restrict access to guns is met with outrage by their defenders and the NRA and their bought and paid for members of Congress.
Teresa.
Yeah, I think that as much as a Republican problem, we have an NRA problem, and that the NRA used to represent gun owners, but now really the NRA represents gun manufacturers, and that's a pretty significant shift. I think it's also important to remember, tragically, in Las Vegas, there are 59 people who have died, 500 who are injured, exponential numbers of people who are suffering, the family, the friends. But also, since then, in the United States, approximately 630 people have been shot and 186 people have been killed, 14 of them children. The Forbes had a fascinating statistic that the definition of mass shooting involves four or more people shot. And since January 1st, this is the 273rd mass shooting in the United States this year out of 275 days. We have an epidemic of gun violence in this country. And for the Congress, the Republicans Congress, to say now is not the time to talk about it is just wrong.
I'm glad you said that. We don't just have a Republican problem, and we don't just have a mass shooting problem. Most of the gun deaths in the United States involve spousal people shooting people they know, people shooting people they know on purpose, also accidentally, and increasingly people taking their own lives with guns. Now, there's some libertarians who think, well, people have the right to commit suicide with a gun. I don't think any parent would agree with that.
186 people have died by a gun, approximately, since this mass shooting in the last 2 days.
Now, we've come to think that that's pretty much the normal state of affairs in the United States. We're an exceptional country. We're wild and woolly. We have this frontier myth. We have lots of crime more than other countries. All of these things, I think, are not quite true. There is no other country, no other developed country that has the gun problem that we have. So what's different between the United States and all of Europe, pretty much all of Asia, pretty much all of Africa, pretty much all of Eurasia? Australia is often held up as a country that once did have a gun problem. They had a horrific gun massacre about 15, 20 years ago. They imposed draconian gun rules, gun control rules. Not only do they not have a lot of mass killings anymore, in fact, I don't think any since then, but also their rate of gun deaths has gone down. There is a direct correlation between the toughness of gun restrictions and the level of gun violence. It's very difficult to say a particular measure, banning a certain kind of weapon, for example, would have prevented a particular incident of gun violence or a particular killing of any kind. But overall, pretty much anything you can do to restrict the number of guns in circulation is going to have some positive effect. It's like, as someone recently said, it's like antibiotics. They don't prevent every infection, but they do cut them down.
I want to go back to something Alan mentioned earlier in the silencer of the putting off of the silencer bill. But also, this idea of not making this device legal
bump
and the bump stock so easy to get and legal that it seems like that would be something that we could do very quickly. And I mean, early polling suggests that most the most Americans, even most gun owners, are for such a measure. So why then, Alan, do you think that there will be such, because we even heard from Mitch McConnell yesterday saying that certainly now is not the time to discuss such a thing?
Well, yeah, I think that the reason that the Republicans are so worried about this is that clearly they're picking something up on their radar that is troubling to them. And there's only one thing that's really troubling to them, and that's losing their majority in the House and losing elections. So we know that. So I think when you get Ryan running up the white flag, which is what he's doing on the silencer bill, he's basically saying we have a problem here and we have to pass the budget, and that's what's important. But it wasn't important a week ago.
You know, you're absolutely right, Alan. I'm glad you brought that up. The silencer bill was originally supposed to have been voted on in June, but guess what happened in June? Senator
Scalise.
The Scalise shooting,
Congressman Scalise.
The congressional baseball game shooting happened. The bill was withdrawn then. This bill is going to come up again. And chances are there's going to be another mass shooting. We've had, 275 in the past 276 days?
I just got a note from somebody who said, you know, stop calling people lunatics and crazy. He knew exactly what he was doing. That doesn't make him crazy. Wrong. Anybody, but anybody who takes another human life has to be crazy. I don't care if you're a mafia hitman, but I'll tell you right now, in this case, you have to be crazy in order to do what this guy did.
Well,
sorry.
The other thing that Speaker Ryan said was that we had a focus on mental health issues. And I don't disagree with him there. I mean, I read Tom Friedman's column on how the Republicans respond to these folks. But that's all well and good for him to say. But let's remember that he's just spent the last 7 years, and particularly the last year, trying to eliminate people's health care coverage, particularly, you know, one of the essential benefits is mental health coverage. And so he has the audacity to say, well, one of the solutions is mental health coverage, when in fact has been working diligently to try to take away people's access to health insurance, which would provide mental health coverage.
Well said, Teresa. It's worse than that. Led by Ryan, Congress, one of the first things it did in the Trump era was repeal the ban on mentally ill people accessing guns.
Absolutely. They weakened the laws for people with mental health. And you know, you say, well, what can you do? I mean, Senator Feinstein, since 2013, has been trying to pass this legislation on bump stocks. But there's a simple thing that is agreement on, which is background checks. Right now, 40% of all gun purchases are done without a basic background check because they're bought at gun shows and other types of purchases. Well, tomorrow, you know, they could pass that. They could deal with this, you know, this bump stock issue. And I'd be interested in hearing from some of our listeners who are gun owners of what they think that they could, you know, what they think could be done. And the other thing that's very simple, I was reading again about it last night, is another problem in this country is people who don't lock their guns. And that there are, according to data, 87% of the firearm deaths to children under 10 happen in a home with a gun that's unlocked. So if parents simply say, before their children go to a house, do you have a gun in your home and is it locked? You know, if we just that there's those simple things. Now that's not
baby steps.
That's not going to deal with what happened in Las Vegas, but again, 93 people a day are killed.
We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we will talk about this some more. We have letters from listeners as well. We welcome your letters. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back.
I met a hiker off the Appalachian.
Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. We have a great panel for you. WAMC's Alan Chartok is here, Teresa Bourgeois, communications consultant, and the new guy on the block. We're thrilled to have him, Don Morrison, who is a former editor at Time Magazine, an author, a journalism professor, and a Berkshire Eagle commentator. And we are very happy to have him with us this morning. Thank you very much for being here. Let's go to the letters and begin with Leah, who says, with all that has been happening, I haven't heard anyone address that the CHP program funding expired September 30th. We actually talked about this yesterday.
I'll talk about that for as long as you want.
Let's put it on hold because we'll finish, but we can certainly discuss it later on in the program. 9 million children are covered through CHIP.
Right? Child Health Plus.
Child Health Plus. It's based on income and assists not only working poor parents but small business owners as well. We'll talk about that as well because there's a bunch of things that have been passing here now as we've been focused on
Puerto Rico
and. And Vegas.
Right. And it's not just the child health insurance program, a couple of others. But I'll pause on that one.
Okay.
You tell me when to hit go and I'll go.
Actually, we got a couple of things here. Here we go. Will Donovan says, as the Las Vegas shooting in the aftermath around it is discussed, I would request WAMC takes a look at how shootings like this perpetrate and continue a narrative that lacks critical thinking around race. Regular lone wolf shootings done by white Christian men are rarely examined in the frame of white supremacy, and I believe and hope the roundtable can see it as such.
Well, at least he can, and he wrote a very good letter.
Yeah, we got a couple links to an article that was written by Sean King on this subject, basically making the point, which I think we have made and we have talked about, that if this were done by a person with non-white skin, that we would be in a different position right now.
As Tom Friedman wrote in the New York Times today and Adam Gopnik in the New Yorker the day before, if this had been a Muslim, if this had been a disciple of jihad, if this has been a member of ISIS, a team of Saudis similar to the ones that took down the World Trade Center, we'd be having congressional hearings. The president would have declared virtual war. We'd be examining what happened, how we can prevent these things from happening in the future. But when it's a white male, or even a male, in some cases a non-white male, an American citizen, when it's an American citizen, somebody, one of us, we have a tendency to say, well, this is not political. Whoever did this had no motive, no political motive. He was merely insane, mentally ill. So all the proper response is to shrug and move on.
And I strongly recommend that people go to the New York Times and read Tom Friedman's piece today. It's so powerful. And he ends with saying that, you know, it's really up to us, that if we want to change anything, we need to change the members of Congress who represent us, and we need to get busy now. And I think that's correct.
Deirdre writes to us, this is a good letter, many of us thought a black man could be never could be president, never thought a woman could be a candidate, yeah, or a gay marriage could be the law of the land. So why is there a prevailing sense of the gun culture will never change?
You know, I can hear the walls shaking out there. Your listeners who are gun owners or who may not agree with us on the subject of gun control are probably a little upset right now that we're following the line we're following. In their defense, I can understand the impulse to want to own a gun for self-defense. It's something, as Ross Douthat writes in today's New York Times, that speaks to the dark side of our natures, and especially those of us who think that the world is a fearful place, that we're surrounded everywhere by evil people, by crime, by uncertainty, by change that we can't explain. We're on the defensive. We're besieged. And yet, even those people, and I have lots of gun owners in my family. I grew up around guns. I served in the Army for a long time, so they're just ordinary things for me. They're not inherently evil. And yet, the better side of even their natures thinks that there has to be a better way to conduct our lives rather than the war of all against all.
And you know, Don, if you walk around upstate New York, if you drive around upstate New York, you'll see repeal the SAFE Act wherever you go. And that's Governor Cuomo's heroic, and I do mean heroic, response to Sandy Hook when he did it. And I'm not always a big fan of that, of the governor, but I have to tell you, I thought that took some real guts, and I thought he did what was right. And you know, I appreciate your reaching out and saying I understand why people want guns, but I don't care at this stage of the game. Personally, I just don't care. I think we've got to have guts. I think we've got to have a major effort to change this thing, this awful situation that we have in this country, and it is really on us as a civilization if we don't do that. So I'm, you know, and one thing, other thing I wanted to say to you and Teresa and Joe, and that is there are a lot of blue dog Democrats who are scared to death of saying that they're not for guns, and they say it all the time. So it ain't only the right-wing Republicans. There are plenty of Democrats who believe in this culture, this mythical nonsense.
But I bet you, Alan, you're absolutely right. And I bet you those blue dog Democrats would be much more outspoken in favor of sensible gun controls if they were convinced it wouldn't cost them an election, if they were in a more marginal, a more balanced district.
Right.
But I also
Exactly right.
I do think that we have to look to responsible gun owners to become part of the solution to this, because the NRA no longer represents them. The NRA represents gun manufacturers, and there's a big difference. And it is, it does make sense for people who want to have guns because they like to go hunting. But those people who do that and are responsible gun owners use them in a responsible way. They lock them up. They separate the ammunition. They don't leave them out on a table. And they don't go and buy a bump stock and go into a hotel, smash out the window, and shoot into a crowd of 22,000 people. Those are not responsible gun owners. And so what we really, and that's why I invite some of them to write in now and say, what would you support? What could help with this? We have to change the culture. And of course, this will inflame everybody, but I also argue we have to think about, you know, violent videos that our kids are watching over and over and over, that they just become a nerd to this, that they just lose any sense of, you know, what's real and what's not. It's just a problem.
I had a whole discussion about this with the students in my class last night, where we were talking about CNN made a decision not to give the name of the shooter. They are now instead just referring to him or as the shooter or calling him a monster or whatever. And that allowed us to get into a discussion of, you know, the sort of the who, what, where, when, why of journalism. One of the things, of course, is the who and naming the person. It seems the responsibility of a news organization. But they feel that it is glorifying glorifying and sensationalizing that man. I would argue, however, to your point, Teresa, that showing the video over and over and over and over again, and showing the violent act and showing the bullets tear through the bodies and the blood, I do not understand that. I also don't understand that as those videos are shown, they are bleeping out the expletives as the people are being shot, and why that is any more obscene than the violence that they are repeatedly showing over and over and over again.
You know, Joe, there are those people, Great Britain being an example of a society that doesn't do it our way, that don't give the names because they think it's prejudicial before the fact. In this case, we certainly knew who the guy was, and we certainly knew what his name was. And there will be somebody who argues, spuriously in my opinion, that because he may have been mentally ill, he was not guilty by reason of insanity, therefore his name shouldn't have been used. But in fact, it is interesting that these individual decisions, and I'd love to hear from Don on this one, because of his long tenure at Time, who live by certain conventions that we have in our media.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that if a reporter sent in an article to you that did not mention the name of the shooter, it would be bounced back, correct?
Well, I can understand CNN's impulse and that of other news organizations not to glorify this guy, not to, but that impulse is undercut by exactly what you said, by normalizing violence. in a way, by depicting these really graphic injuries. It becomes the new pornography, and I think that's very damaging, especially to young people, to have to see this. Young people who play these violent video games, which have become increasingly graphic and realistic, it's getting hard to distinguish the difference between a graphic video game and what took place in Las Vegas.
I mean, the reports of the Columbine shooters, that they spent hours and hours and hours of their day, you know, for a long time in advance of what they did, watching violent video games. And same with the Sandy Hook shooter.
It is a conundrum that journalists have been talking about for years and years. On the one hand, we have a responsibility to tell people exactly what happened, hoping that it might lead to some sort of constructive action, which unfortunately it hasn't in most cases. On the other hand, we don't want to encourage copycat repetitions of this by glory-seeking, misguided young people.
And the key question is, he had, 47 firearms and just enormous amounts of ammunition. Who sold him that? How did he get it? Did he get it all legally? So on and so forth.
We have more letters. We'll go to Bill, who says, in order to start the discussion about gun control, we need to address the use of guns in our popular culture. There is too much gun violence, is what we were just talking about, TV and in the movies. Until we stop romanticizing guns, we have little chance of convincing the people to support any form of gun control. I'm not disagreeing with anybody here, but do we think that the 64-year-old guy was playing video games and watching?
Well, he may have been in his youth, Joe, but it doesn't much, or recently, it doesn't much matter. We should approach this on every single front. That's one of them. That's a long-term front.
Yeah.
But in the short term, we really, am I allowed to say this, damned well ought to be doing something about the way in which guns are disseminated in this country.
Because
I mean, it's that simple.
And I do think he's absolutely right in the letter about the romanticizing of guns.
Absolutely. And it's just bumpers to movies. You can't, you know, go online to look up a news story, and first you have to watch some violent trailer for some upcoming film that I never want to see because so many people get shot. It was interesting, Colbert last night, I think it was him, did a compilation, you know, the president in the White House and the members of Congress, the talking points are saying, you know, out of respect for the people, the victims, now is not the time to talk about legislation. But he did this great compilation of before, after every gun tragedy, and probably the last six or seven, they said exactly the same thing. There'll be time for that later. Now's not the time.
But it never comes, right, Teresa?
It never comes. And today, another 93 people on average will be shot and killed with a gun. Seven of those will be children. And it's going to happen tomorrow. And it's going to happen again the next day. And there won't be, you know, fanfare. There won't be trucks. There won't be profiles of these people on the national news. But it's going to happen. We have an epidemic in this country.
And the one thing that the Republicans who are leading this, let's talk about it later, charge, are afraid of, is that they're going to lose their seats in Congress. That's what they're worried about. And I don't think there's any way around it. There's a point at which one's outrage has to become foremost in the way in which a democracy works, because no matter how much money the NRA puts in or the gun manufacturers put in and the rest of it, there's a certain common sense that we are killing ourselves.
Barbara writes this letter and says, a review of statewide licensing requirements shows that in more than half of the country, applicants are not required to demonstrate their shooting ability before buying a gun. However, nearly every state requires some sort of boating safety course. Before driving a car, you must have a learner's permit, practice driving, take a pre-licensing course, and pass a road test. Boats, cars, and guns are all lethal weapons. Why are they not treated the same?
By the way, I love that letter. I love the letter, except that if you think about it for a minute, do you really want to make sure that these guys are that these people are more lethal because they we've taught them how to aim a gun?
Well, it would allow you to hopefully as part of a licensing procedure as well as a background procedure that could all be put in together, that for the sensible gun owner who is using it for hunting and so forth, that there would be more control in that regard.
Yeah, but you can imagine somebody like Sheriff Joe Arpaio. One of those guys saying, let's take a look at the profile of this guy who's applying for a gun license.
But also it allows an opportunity. You know, there have been situations where family members have pleaded saying, you know, there's got to be some way that this person, my family member who's mentally ill should not, or who has some issues, should not be able to buy a gun. Help us, you know. And so what are the fire breaks there? And
could you explain that a little bit more, Teresa? So I think I missed the point.
If a family member says that they're concerned about somebody owning a gun because they think that they have mental health issues, they have few little recourse about how to, you know, block them from going and buying a gun. Yeah.
Yeah, but there are also people, some in the mental health community, who take great exception to putting any restrictions on people who are mentally ill and saying, look, this is not fair. Why should they not be allowed to have a gun?
Certainly public safety would override that objection.
Well, I agree with you. But
I'm
telling
you
that I'm telling you they're there.
All right, we have I want to get through some letters here real quick before we go to break at the top of the hour. David writes, yes, Congress is bought and paid for, but not just by gun lobbies, big pharma, energy, et cetera, et cetera. Pick one, they all pay. Congress, both sides of the aisle, feeds out on different ends of the same corporate money trough and then points at the other end and calls them bad. It never ends.
And that's why Kennedy's position on gerrymander is so important.
We'll get to that as well.
Okay, go.
James says, my town board in Saratoga opposed the SAFE Act, and when I asked a town board member who is also a prominent pastor of a local church why he opposed the law, he said, as a gun enthusiast, the restrictions on magazine capacities was inconvenient. Gina said, I'm a licensed gun owner due to rabid woodchucks and such. I went to two safety courses, underwent background check, and have a gun lock. I also keep bullets separate from the gun. I support the Second Amendment and support gun reform. No civilian should own semi-automatics and or adapters. They are all baby steps, but critical. Perhaps people can get reimbursed for turning in those people killers.
Well, Michael, should there be laws against it? That's another question. In other words, if somebody didn't lock the gun or kept the bullets with the gun, should there be a law that says, okay, you're going to be liable for that?
Michael says, I own two handguns and two rifles, Teresa. The Second Amendment does not give private citizens the right to own a gun, only in order to form a well-regulated militia. Guns need to be severely restricted, background checks, no mental illness, no automatic weapons, as hard as you can make it. Jacob says, I would stick with the comment that the race of the shooter totally matters and not the citizenship. Remember the outrage after the San Bernardino and Fort Lauderdale shootings. Both of those shooters were U.S. citizens, but were Muslims. Chris says, the New York Unsafe Act is nothing to prevent another Newtown, yet Cuomo and convicted felons Silver and Scalos sold out Americans. The New York Safe Schools and School Buses Act would have provided security at every school and school bus in New York. Evil knows no bounds and is unlimited. Two killers with machetes in a locked classroom or bus can kill many. Only security can mitigate death from violence.
I want to go very quickly to protect the license report that both Skelos and Silver's convictions were overturned.
Catherine says, I keep wondering where law enforcement stands in this. The proliferation of privately owned guns puts them at greater risk, too. Michael says, can you talk about the connection between Citizens United and the NRA and how the power of the few has hijacked our ability to pass responsible or any kind of gun control?
That's why I believe that one of the solutions here lies with organizing responsible gun owners. And along with those,
specifically the NRA spent $3 million on last year's election itself, but another $54 million through outside groups that Citizens United allows.
And they fund their TV channel now, that
yep.
which I would call fake news. But
And finally, Susan, any gun control legislation at this point will do little to prevent future violence. There are millions of guns already in circulation, almost equal the entire population of the country. Let's take
a break. So we should give up, right?
Right. Don't give up. Don't give up.
We can't give up. Let's take a break. When we come back, we will talk about many other issues. There's a lot going on. And we'll come back and address all of that right after this. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion this morning. Alan Shartok is here, Teresa Bourgeois, and Don Morrison, and we welcome your letters, panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. Let us go into, I'm going to read just two more letters, and this will get us into other subjects. Keith writes, yesterday, John Faso and GOP House members voted on party line vote to stop abortions after 20 weeks. These are the same people who let the CHIP program, which provides health care to children, expire last week. The same guy who voted to take away health care from 23 million Americans. Obviously, Faso and the rest of the GOP don't care about children after they are born. Just look at their voting records. They only care about their donors and being reelected. We also got this from Christine, who says, let's talk about H.R. 36 that was shoved through Congress yesterday, a ban on abortion after 20 weeks for any reason, a promise made by Trump during the campaign. And Leah's letter, which says, with all that has been happening, I haven't heard anyone address the fact that the CHIP program funding expired September 30th. So we want to talk about those two items of other things that are working their way through Washington as we talk about these other issues.
Well, on the abortion ban, I'm hardly qualified to talk about it, but it does seem a little cruel and heartless to make it increasingly difficult for women, especially poor women and especially women in rural areas, to obtain abortions. And the 20-week ban fits right into that. Abortions are not free. They're not covered, of course, by any government-related health program.
Right. Hyde Amendment. Yep.
Exactly, the Hyde Amendment. And as a result, you got to have some money. And it takes a long time to come up with the money in some cases. And that pushes, I'm told, some women over the 20-week limit who otherwise would have no intention of being over that limit.
And as to the other part of the people who've written in, the Child Health Plus, it's not just the Child Health Plus program that was that they allowed to expire. And the Child Health Plus provides health care coverage for about 9 million children around the country, about 330,000 in New York State. These are children who their parents, they don't qualify for Medicaid, but they don't have enough funding to get insurance on their own, and so they qualify under Child Health Plus. And some argue that it should be allowed to expire because it was intended that people would shift over to coverage under the Affordable Care Act. But as that is being dissembled by this administration, then they really need to keep the Child Health Plus program in place. There is some talk that they will reauthorize it, that we're hearing this week, but it's not been done yet, and it's thrown the program into chaos. But in addition to that, they let funding for community health centers expire, and they also let funding for what's called disproportionate share hospital funds. These are funds paid to hospitals for people who come in and they get coverage. I mean, they get care, but they don't have health care coverage. And I know Karen DeWitt here at WMC has done a great job of shining a light on this.
Let me ask, do you guys think this is some coordinated effort by the Republicans to completely dismantle government-supported health care in the U.S.?
Well, certainly. I mean, but here's what's first of all, I want to make one small correction, which I'll get hell for, and that is that John Faso said he was going to—I don't think there's a major difference here, by the way—that he was, and I couldn't figure out why he did this. He was going to vote for the president's health bill. He never got to, in my opinion, unless I'm missing something here.
Oh, right, no, he absolutely did.
No, the vote no, where the vote that where they all celebrated in the Rose Garden. That bill he voted for.
Right, the House voted.
A second. There was a second vote, right? Because the first time, remember, they didn't vote. He said he would have voted for
right,
it.
And then he did vote for the House vote.
Right, okay, and when it went through committee, I listened to those committee hearings. He talked about it. He voted for it.
Yeah, he had that crazy thing in there where he and Collins were gonna add something to the state tax. Make the state do all of the Medicaid taxing. Remember that whole thing? Yeah.
Right.
Exactly right. Yeah. Okay, I stand corrected.
And I will also say, I saw something the other night now that really disturbed me. Congresswoman Claudia Tenney, am I saying that right?
Yeah.
She had a town meeting that I didn't see the town meeting, but I read about it. And in the discussion about health care, she denigrated Senator John McCain, said that he was for himself and not for Americans. I just found that to be reprehensible. Now, you can disagree with Senator McCain on the policy. You can come out and say, I disagree with his vote. But to say that a POW, a person who spent 5-6 years of his life, captured and held in unspeakable conditions, cares more about himself than America or Americans. I think that's beyond the pale. It just was so disturbing to me.
Maybe like the president, she prefers senators who don't get brain cancer.
I just think that there's a real coarseness. It's so obvious to say, but a coarseness in our dialogue right now that just has got to stop somewhere. And you can disagree with people on policy, but to say that about a POW, about anybody, just...
Or Teresa, to take a child's right to health care away from them.
Right.
A child's right to go. And, the thing that's getting me about all of this is that here we are. We're self-confessed liberal people. I think that's fair to say. And yet, who is fighting against these programs? The people who will benefit the most who are in that group that have been targeted by the Republicans and the president. That's extraordinary to me.
Absolutely right. And if we keep them riled up over taking away their guns, perhaps they won't notice.
Right. Well, actually, yesterday, Senator Schumer and some of the other Democrats had a press conference because the budget bills are moving through now, and the tax package is in the budget reconciliation bill, and there's language in there that has enormous proposed cuts in Medicaid and Medicare. They have to figure out some way to pay for this, and so they've tucked language in there that allows them down the road to make cuts in Medicaid and Medicare. And you asked, with these letting these programs expire, is that part of a larger effort? And I think it is. Maybe they'll return the money, but it's to sow confusion at around the same time that people are going to be enrolling, need to be enrolling in the Affordable Care Act.
Can you imagine taking an older person, many of whom, I hate to say it, live on Medicare. Medicare. Forget about Medicaid for a minute. We shouldn't forget it, but Medicare, which is basically a program that does take care of many middle-class or allegedly middle-class people. Can you imagine taking Medicare away from individuals who are going to show up at the hospital emergency room and show their card? They say, we don't take that anymore? It's unbelievable.
Yes, but Hillary's tapes, Hillary's emails.
Yeah, but her emails. And speaking of emails.
Yeah.
And what about, in all of this, there's little attention being paid to Kushner and Ivanka Trump. Not one, not two, but three different.
Let's not talk about it. Let's talk about the NFL and kneeling during the national anthem, right, or let's talk about some other manufactured crises that will distract us from what's really important.
But there has to be some counterbalance to this effort by the Republicans to not get people to sign up for the health care programs. I mean, I don't know, maybe Facebook seems to be able to reach a lot of people. Maybe they could step in. What is going to be the non-governmental response, since the government is working so hard to create disarray during this enrollment period? What can the rest of us do?
I do want to move to the subject of Puerto Rico and talk about the president's visit. We should note the president is on his way right now to Las Vegas. But he was in Puerto Rico yesterday. We got this letter that said, after the extremely shameful, you people are lucky, have some paper towels, have fun, aren't I great, you people are costing us a lot of money fiasco Trump had in Puerto Rico yesterday. It makes one wonder when we will finally say enough to this man. And that is from Christian in Hillsdale. So the
I know Christian in Hillsdale, I think, and a good man. But I have to say, I do think that this is extraordinary that he goes out there. He has the other face, the other face. This is the one that says, I feel sorry for all you people. Too bad you spent all your money unwisely on breaking the Puerto Rican government. And there's always this sort of mixed message, but it's one that's filled with empathy. And people say, well, that was nice. He read a presidential type speech. As if that takes away from all the dissonance that this guy creates as a matter of course. We have to be united now. That makes me sick.
Well, that happened Monday. Yesterday, we didn't see much of that. It was all about of saying his comments, 16 versus in the thousands, comparing the storm certified death toll to the 833 killed in Hurricane Katrina, which he described as a real catastrophe. You can be very proud of all your people, all of your working together. He said 16 versus literally thousands of people. You can be very proud. And then he just started lobbing paper towels into the crowd.
Can you imagine?
The trip marked a well-worn routine for a president on his fourth visit to a disaster zone in 2 months, a pep rally like briefing with officials in an aircraft hangar, a quick drive past twisted houses and uprooted trees, and a brief friendly encounter with victims of the destruction. And like his earlier travels, it had its peculiar moments. He also gently tossed rolls of paper towels into the crowd that gathered to see him at the Calvary Chapel outside the island's capital, San Juan. This time, however, Mr. Trump flew into a different kind of turbulence. Over the weekend, the president lashed out at the mayor of San Juan after she complained about the federal response. She said she was not mollified after meeting him. The first part of the meeting was a public relations situation, Ms. Cruz said in an interview with CNN. While she said the White House staff was helpful and receptive, that his style gets in the way. I would hope that the president of the United States stops spouting out comments that really hurt the people of Puerto Rico, because rather than commander-in-chief, he has become miscommunicator-in-chief.
Well, that sort of speaks for itself. Joe, at some point, I hope you'll save, I know you said you would, a few moments just to talk about the gerrymander, which I think is so important to the way in which the politics of this country is organized.
Don, you were starting to say something, and then we'll go to the next one.
I'm just going to say, to paraphrase, I mean, paper towels. Who organized this trip? Who allowed Trump to have so much unscheduled time? Alan is absolutely right. He's fine when he reads a speech written by somebody else, but once you allow him to say what pops into his head, that's when he really gets into trouble. You could say that's when we really get to know the real Trump. All I can do, paper towels, all I can do is to paraphrase George Bush during the Katrina disaster.
Brownie.
Heck of a job, Brawny.
Brawny, yes.
Brownie. I'm sorry, Teresa, go ahead.
What struck me, a couple of things about this visit. One is that
I have 3 minutes and I have to get in gerrymandering, so go ahead.
Can't lose sight of the fact that these folks need help, even though Donald Trump doesn't think they do. So we have to do what Americans do. We have to keep helping Puerto Rico privately because the government's not going to do it. The second thing is he keeps disparaging. Clearly, Puerto Rico's going to need a bailout. They were in economic trouble before. He keeps disparaging that. But I just go back to his Treasury Secretary Mnuchin. He bought up the IndyMac Bank, and the government bailed out the IndyMac Bank to a tune of $1.55 billion in secured loans. And then he then sold it and made enormous amounts of money. The government has bailed out a lot of different entities. And so let's, you know, be clear that it's not just Puerto Rico.
So as the Supreme Court works on and just started on Monday, they are looking at a gerrymandering case, and the headline in the Times today is Justice Kennedy's vote in play on voting maps worked by politics after spirited Supreme Court arguments on Tuesday. There was reason to think that Justice Kennedy may be ready to join the court's more liberal members in a groundbreaking decision that could reshape American democracy by letting courts determine when lawmakers have gone too far.
Who in the world would allow people who are running for office to draw their own districts? Can you imagine Dean Skelos saying to the great computer, draw me a district where I can't lose? Sheldon Silver and all the rest of them right now, Flanagan, everybody's doing it. Hastie has been doing it in the assembly. It's crazy. What kind of a democracy can you have? This is so fundamental. I don't think everybody gets it. It's so fundamental to the organization of our politics, because when you allow them to control their state legislatures by drawing the lines so that only they can win, this is a farce.
Here's the problem. How do you measure a gerrymandered district? Is it a standard deviation away from a perfect one-to-one correlation between your vote and the effectiveness of your vote? But how do you measure that? And if you look at the oral arguments before the court the other day, you'll see some members, the more conservative members, were upset or a little uncomfortable with the social science that goes into this.
Right.
Now, just in the past couple of years, teams of social scientists have worked on this problem, and they've come up with an enormously complex appealing, effective ways of doing this.
Hey, Don, you can do it. You can do it. We know in New York. We know in New York State they did it. They said to a federal judge, these clowns can't, they don't use the word, but these clowns are always going to be self-serving. So what we're going to do is we're going to allow the judge to draw the districts. The judge drew the districts, and there were fair fights.
Absolutely.
So-called fair
fights. Absolutely
fight.
Right, Alan.
So it can be done.
In Florida, pretty much the same thing happened. A judge threatened to draw the district himself if the legislature didn't draw a fair one, and in the end they did. God bless the League of Women Voters, which brought that suit.
Well, it's like obscenity. I'll know it when I see it, say the judges. And this ain't right, and this is.
You know, having written and edited quite a few Supreme Court stories, I must, however, caution you. Just because Justice Kennedy asks some tough questions of the people defending this doesn't necessarily mean that's how he'll end up.
Yes.
All right, we are out of time. My thanks to Alan, of course, and Teresa. Don, thank you very much for being here.
It's been a pleasure. You never told me it was this much fun.
I hope you'll come back.
At your service.
I know you are. You make the circuit, so hopefully we'll be on your path at
Absolutely.
Some other point. Great. Thank you very much. We will be back with more show after this.